Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says she was out for dinner last night in Virginia when she was refused service at a restaurant because she works for the Trump administration. I want to bring in CNN's White House correspondent Boris Sanchez, who's been following these developments. So, Boris, what do we know?
Hey there, Freddie. Yeah, we got tipped off to this story after a server at the Redhead restaurant in Virginia posted on Facebook saying, and I'm paraphrasing, that they attempted to serve Sarah Sanders for a short while before the owner of that restaurant intervened and asked Sarah Sanders and her family, seven of her family members, to leave the restaurant. We reached out to the Red Hen. We've yet to hear back from them. But I reached out to Sarah Sanders, and she referred me to her Twitter account in which she confirmed this story. Here's what the press secretary for President Trump tweeted out. She writes, quote, "Last night I was told by the owner of Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia to leave because I work for President Trump, and I politely left. Her actions say far more about her than about me. I always do my best to treat people, including those I disagree with, respectfully, and will continue to do so." As you can imagine, Fred, the Yelp reviews for the Red Hen in Virginia are very political right now. Jokes aside, though, we should point out that this is only the latest instance that we've seen a Trump administration official have a hard time while going out to eat this week. We saw reports that Stephen Miller was heckled as he was trying to eat at a Mexican restaurant. And we've seen video of the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security getting booed out of a restaurant here in D.C., also a Mexican restaurant, as a result of the Trump administration's immigration policy. Fred?
Being heckled, being booed, but as far as we know, do we know that anyone working in the White House has been denied service or been asked to leave, like Sarah Sanders, tweets that she was?
From the reports that we heard about the instance with Kirstjen Nielsen, the booing was caused by a group of people, an outside group of people that entered the restaurant, and that essentially impeded her from being able to enjoy the service there at that Mexican restaurant. So she left, but it's not clear if the actual wait staff or the ownership of that restaurant asked her to leave, the way that we've now gotten confirmation that Sarah Sanders was asked to leave, Fred.
All right. Boris Sanchez, thank you so much. The White House, appreciate that. All right. Joining me right now is Anna Navarro, a CNN political commentator, and Jack Kingston, also a CNN political commentator and a former senior advisor to the Trump campaign. Thanks to both of you for being with me. So, Anna, let me begin with you. You know, this tweet from Sarah Sanders saying she was, you know, kicked out of that restaurant because she works for the president. This kind of in your face, if you want to call it, you know, backlash now. Do you see this as a direct correlation, you know, to what is transpiring right now on the border, or is this bigger potentially than that?
Look, I think this is something that's been building up for the 18 months that Donald Trump has been president. People have seen this president lie and lie and lie and lie time again. They've seen him do outrageous, offensive things. Sarah Sanders, as his spokesperson, has become the face of this administration. And I think, you know, some people are offended by the idea of baking a cake for a gay couple. They find that morally offensive. Some people find the idea of tearing children away from their families and then lying about it morally offensive and don't want to be part of that. I think it's a difficult issue. I feel very badly that her children, her family had to witness that. But I also think there's, look, you make choices in life. You make choices in life. And there is a cost to being an accomplice to this cruel, deceitful administration.
So, Jack, how do you see it? Is this potentially just the beginning? I mean, Boris just helped recall, you know, for Homeland Security, you know, Secretary. You know, she got jeers when she was at.
So, good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. What you just heard, of course, was the latest controversy over whether or not Sarah Huckabee Sanders should have been kicked out of her restaurant that she went to. And I want to ask a larger philosophical question this hour. How do we defeat Trumpism? Or even largely, how do you defeat hate? How do you defeat racist populist movements? Does things like what would happen to Sarah Sanders, does that help? Does that hurt? Where do we go from here? So I really want to explore a long philosophical, political, psychological question. How do we stop the hate? And is this the right thing to do? And I really would welcome your calls on this show. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We will get started right after this break.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. How do we defeat Trumpism? Or more broadly, how do we defeat hate? The question comes in the wake of the, the disagreement, I guess, among liberals and among Americans as to whether or not it was proper to kick Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders out of the Little Red Hen, out of the restaurant where she was decidedly unwelcome. Most of you know the story by now. A number of the employees were gay. Republicans have stood up firmly for the right to refuse gay people service. You may remember conservatives back in the 60s. William F. Buckley, famous intellectual conservative, not a dumb man, defended the right of people to refuse to serve blacks. So Republicans strongly believe that you should be able to refuse service to blacks, to gays, to people that you don't like. Should liberals do the same? Are we playing into their hands? Can you hate hate? Should you be intolerant of intolerance? That's the question I pose today. I'll give you my own thoughts really at the end of the hour. First, I really want to pose a question. I want to, because this is a very large question. This is a question that has bedeviled mankind, humankind, for millennia. It's the great question of religion. Christianity teaches that you turn the other cheek. What does that mean? Does that mean if someone hits you really hard on your left cheek, you should turn your right cheek and get beaten up there too? What does that say to victims, survivors of domestic violence? Should they turn the other cheek? In 1934, there was a New York Times article encouraging Jews to be kinder to Nazis, because only then would the Germans stop being so racist. Obviously, that strategy didn't work. And yet, if we hate the haters, don't we become them? Donald Trump is the king of incivility. No one is crueler or more nasty or more likely to be racist than any Noah president of modern times. Has been this much of a jerk, this much of a bastard, this much of a words I can't use on the radio as this president. We've never had a president this uncivil. Do they have a right to complain about civility? I'm going to give you a lot of historical examples, a lot of literary examples, religious examples tonight, and they're going to go in all directions. I'm going to try not to let you know what side I'm leaning on until the end of the broadcast, and I would also want to hear from you, too. But I just want to throw out a bunch of examples. After World War II, the Germans, of course, had murdered millions of innocent people, focused primarily on Jews, but also gay people, gypsies, disabled people, people they captured, innocent civilians. And it wasn't just the Germans, right? We know that the Poles joined in, and the French joined in, and the Ukrainians joined in, and practically all of Europe joined in the killing spree. Kill or be killed, or because they enjoyed the killing? That's a whole nother question. There's a wonderful book by Daniel Goldhagen called Hitler's Willing Executioners, as he talked about ordinary people and why they participate in the killing spree. If you look at the genocide in Rwanda, you'll find that ordinary Hutus and Tutsis hacked other ordinary Hutus and Tutsis to bits because they were not of the same tribe. Now, we haven't gotten there yet. I recognize that. But how does the hate stop? Germany today is a peaceful country, a relatively non-racist country. I suspect there are fewer racists in Germany today as a percentage of the population than in the United States. A population that welcomes immigrants. Not to say they're not far-right, dangerous people in Germany, but the crux of the German population is not that way. They are proud of their tolerance. What turned Germany around? Well, it took the utter devastation of the occupation of Germany by the United States and Britain and France and the Soviet Union, the leveling of their cities to the ground. We firebombed Dresden, murdered tens of thousands of civilians ourselves in our taking of Germany. But something else happened too. After the war, German prisoners of war were astonished by their treatment in American jails. They were astonished because they were treated well. They expected to be massacred. They expected to be tortured. Instead, they were given food and bed and health care. And they went back to Germany shocked at the kindness of their enemy. Did that have a role in pacifying Germany for years afterwards? Let me move to a literary example. Have you read the book A Wrinkle in Time? One of my favorite children's books. Actually, one of the few children's books of my generation where the hero is a young girl rather than a young boy. The young girl is Meg, and she confronts, well, hatred. The hatred is promulgated by an evil brain. It's literally a brain on a stool, on a pedestal. And this brain sends out evil waves that force people into conformity. In the land where she is sent to try to save her father, everyone acts the same. Everyone walks in lockstep, talks in lockstep. Little boys bounce their balls in lockstep. She even sees a boy who doesn't bounce his ball in lockstep. He bounces off the beat, looks suddenly very scared, and then someone comes and whisks that boy away. He didn't bounce according to the beat. Nonconformity is punished in the land where she goes. And Meg has to decide how to defeat this hate, how to defeat this evil brain that has taken over and kept her father and her little brother, her intelligent little brother who's gotten under the sway of this evil brain. Obviously, this is all a metaphor, but I think you can see what I'm referring to. She tries really hard to defeat this hate. And in the book, sorry for the spoiler alert. Hopefully most of you have read it. Still worth reading. In the book, she starts to hate the hate. She starts to hate the brain. She hates it. It's destroying her family. It's destroying the world around it. She hates the brain and hates it and hates it. And Madeleine L'Engle, the author of A Wrinkle in Time, says she almost falls under its sway in a sea of rage. The brain is called it. It thrives on hate. Hating it, hating hate, gives it more power. And suddenly, in a burst of resistance, in a burst of remembering who she is, she decides she can't defeat hate with hate. She can only defeat hate with love. She realizes, though, that she can't love this terrible, evil brain that's destroying the world. How could she love this awful thing? She can't. She thought, would love destroy it? She doesn't know. She can't do that. But she can love her little brother. And she pours out her intense love for her little brother. And in doing so, helps her brother escape from it. And thus causes it to, shrivel up and die. Okay, that's a literary metaphor. And what does this all have to do with denying Sarah Huckabee Sanders service? I'm an elected official. No doubt there are people who don't like what I do. I'm also a radio host. I give my opinions at least twice a week on the air. No doubt my opinions offend some people. Would I like to be thrown out of a restaurant because of my opinions? Nope, I wouldn't. Now, I represent Alexandria, Virginia, a very liberal, progressive place. My constituents largely agree with me, or I wouldn't be reelected. But what if I were in Lexington, Virginia, or what if I were in Podunk, Arkansas, or Idaho, or some small town, let's say some small racist town? What if I were refused service for being gay, or I was refused service just for being a loudmouth, opinionated person? I wouldn't like it. But does that mean that kicking Sarah Sanders out is not okay? Does it matter whether Mark Levine likes it? Maybe because I purposely put myself before a microphone. I purposely chose to be elected. I knew what I was getting into when I started. Maybe if I had the courage of my convictions, I'd walk out proudly if some racist kicked me out. Or maybe it's a really bad sign because, you know, if we start kicking out Sarah Huckabee Sanders, they can start kicking out gay people or black people or Jews or atheists or Muslims or whoever doesn't belong. This is not an easy philosophical question, and I have my own way to address it. But I'm going to spend the hour posing the question. One of the things I learned as a little child, questions are often more interesting than answers. I will come down with where I come down. But first, I want to give all points of view here a play, because I don't think it's an easy answer. I want to hear from you. And then I promise you at the end of the broadcast, I'll tell you where I come down with this, I think, difficult philosophical question. Can you hate hate? Is it okay to hate hate? Does hating hate help defeat hate? And how do you love hate? How can we be tolerant of intolerance without being intolerant ourselves? Tough questions, back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Are the haters just going to hate, 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 hate? Do we just shake it off? When people criticize what I say on the air, I look at their motivations. If they're just haters, Mark, you liberal idiot, I do shake it off. But if someone brings a smart critique to what I said, disagrees with me in an intelligent way and gives examples, well, then I should listen. One of my listeners on Facebook writes, actually quotes from Proverbs 15, quote, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." And there is a lot of biblical idea that, yes, love can defeat hate. But should we turn the other cheek? Is that the answer? Again, what would you tell a victim of domestic violence? If you got slapped in the cheek, wouldn't you encourage her to turn that person in rather than being slapped again? If we continually allow ourselves to be slapped, if that becomes normal, are we indeed helping the people that slap? No one has been more uncivil than this current president of the United States, who has advocated beating up people, who has talked in racist terms about virtually everyone, Mexicans and black people, and a president whose policies include ripping children away from their parents and placing them in secret baby cages. Now that's the work of a monster. And yet, I saw on CNN a really disturbing video of a white woman talking to apparently a Mexican man or a Mexican-American man, wasn't clear. And he was saying, you know, we're just trying to live here. We're just trying to make our lives here. And she said, you're a rapist. The President of the United States says you're a rapist. The President of the United States says you're a gang member. She was unwilling to see his humanity. Recently, I read an article from a white woman who was apparently, in her 60s or 70s. They showed a picture of her today, and they showed a picture of her in the 1960s. She looked to be about 17 then. Her arm is raised up, and she has this distorted, angry look on her face as she's screaming at a young black girl about to enter what might be her school, or might be some other school. 17-year-old girl screaming angrily at an 8-year-old girl. And this woman, 50 years later, speaks apologetically. She's embarrassed. She can't believe that she is the same person who's in that photo. That photo was a famous newspaper photo of this angry white woman. She's embarrassed. How can she be that same person? How do we embarrass the racist today and change her mind? Does hating her help, or does it just stir her up? To help answer this question, I decided to rely on one of the greatest philosophers of evil ever. Her name is Hannah Arendt, and she did a case study on Adolf Eichmann. Adolf Eichmann was, in many ways, the mastermind of the Final Solution. Yeah, Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews, but he left it to Eichmann, this bureaucratic guy, to sort out the details, to figure out where the trains would run, to decide how much gas was necessary to commit mass murder and yet not use too much gas. Eichmann was the architect of the Holocaust. Now, the state of Israel does not have the death penalty. Yeah, I know people die in wars, but in terms of captured prisoners, they don't have the death penalty, except in one case. There's only one person that's ever been executed by the Israeli government, and that is Adolf Eichmann. After giving him a full trial, they got him out of Argentina, brought him back to Jerusalem, and put him on trial. And Hannah Arendt decided to study Adolf Eichmann to help understand what she called the banality of evil. Is evil banal, common, ordinary? She was struck by how ordinary this guy was. He was not a raving lunatic. He did not hear voices. He was a very ordinary, mild-mannered man. Here are some of the things that Hannah Arendt discovered about Adolf Eichmann. She said that he displayed neither guilt for his actions nor hatred for those trying him. She said he kept saying he was just doing his job, doing his duty, obeying orders, obeying the law, and therefore he had no responsibility for what he did. Eichmann said that he was simply doing what his society wanted him to do, and to some extent that was true. She was found striking his inability to think for himself. Instead, what Eichmann would do was use a lot of stock phrases and cliches, repeating words used again and again.
No collusion,
lock her up, fake news. He would repeat basically things that Hitler said again and again and again without questioning what he was saying. She also found that Eichmann was a joiner. He wanted to be part of something. He had real difficulties being alone and real difficulties thinking for himself. As a youth, he belonged to the YMCA. He tried to get into the Freemasons, and then he was accepted into the Nazi SS. And in fact, the thing he was most depressed about after losing World War II was that he wouldn't be able to be a member of something anymore. Hannah Arendt writes that Eichmann was not very intelligent. He actually was unable to even complete high school, unable to keep a job. In fact, he tried to cover up during his trial, the trial that would lead to his execution, he tried to cover up mostly his lack of skills and education. He didn't try to cover up the murders he committed. He tried to cover up that he was not very smart. She also found that he was a braggart, that he took actually credit for things that he didn't do. He overestimated his own intelligence. The six psychologists that interviewed him found no trace of mental illness, no trace even of a personality disorder. They found that he had a friendly traits, and the only thing they found unusual was that he was more normal, more conformist than the average person. Have I described your average Trumpist? Someone who wants to fit in? Someone who wants to conform? Someone who wants to be a part? Someone who doesn't like to think for themselves? Someone who repeats stock phrases without questioning what they mean? Are there a lot of common personality traits between the master of the Holocaust and your average Trump supporter? Could Eichmann have been defeated with love? These are questions we have to ask. We know that, yes, the white Southern woman 50 years later is shocked at who she was as the young, angry 17-year-old girl. But the heart of hate is conformity. The heart of hate is forcing the little boy to bounce his ball in rhythm with everyone else, Madeline Langel teaches us. The heart of hate is refusing to think for yourself. Now think what changed. What changed the hateful woman of segregation? What changed her mind? Was it hate? Was it love? Or was it the culture around her? Would she have continued to hate if her culture had continued to hate? I have no doubt that's true. But suddenly she was not in conformity with the culture. Suddenly everyone recognized, at least publicly, that racism was wrong. Suddenly it became uncool to be a racist. That, in my view, is why the segregationist woman changed her mind. So let's go back to Sarah Sanders. Let's go back to Donald Trump. Right? We took it someone who's unintelligent, who brags a lot, someone who repeats stock phrases. Adolf Eichmann, Donald Trump, I don't see a lot of difference in their personalities. I guess Eichmann's a joiner. But so's Donald Trump. Why did Donald Trump change his policy about mistreating, abusing, torturing little children? Because even his friends turned against him. Not because Democrats complained, but because some Republicans started complaining. Because some evangelicals started complaining. Yeah, and he didn't really change it, and we all know that he's still trying to do awful things, but please understand my point. It's not hatred, nor necessarily is it love. It's conformity that's the problem. Once people understand that they are allowed to think for themselves, they are allowed to be different, it's okay to be gay, it's okay to have a different religion, it's okay to have a different ethnicity, that we celebrate difference, if we celebrate tolerance, that defeats hate. So the ultimate question, should we be tolerant of intolerance? Well, my answer is no. No, it is not intolerant to be intolerant of intolerance. That may sound a bit convoluted. But if we stand up for tolerance, we stand up for supporting diversity, that may mean that we have to call out people in power. Now, I do make a distinction between your average Trumpist and Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She has put herself in the limelight. She is a leader, or Kirstjen Nielsen, or Donald Trump. That means that people like me have to be willing to have thicker skin. People like me have to be willing to undergo some more criticism. That's okay. I put myself in this arena. So did Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I'm not saying to refuse to serve every Trumpist. But if we can show that as a society, we reject Trumpism, we reject hatred, and we can show as a society that these principles are not our principles, that they're un-American, that they're evil, that they're wrong, they're not ordinary differences in political discourse, but fundamentally hateful and disgusting things, we can change the culture around us and convince all these conformists who don't like to think for themselves that their ideas are not welcome. I got a bunch of callers, and I want to get to you after the break. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I know I got a bunch of callers on the line. I'm going to get to you in just one more second. I do want to sum up my argument. How do we get the person who 50 years out of segregation is astonished that she ever supported it? How do we deal with the Germans who, after the Holocaust, are, by all accounts, most of them good, honest, non-racist people who value tolerance? How does that happen? The answer is not to hate them and not to love them. We couldn't love the segregationists as they're doing what they're doing. We couldn't love the Nazis as they're doing what they're doing. The answer is to defeat them and then treat them with loveness, love and empathy. Defeat first, love second, but do both. Do both. Defeat the Nazis. Use every force you can to destroy them, to utterly destroy them. But then, once they're captured in the POW camps, treat them with kindness. Defeat segregation, but take the people who used to support it and don't treat them as pariahs. Teach them that this is not the way they should think. Use the fact that these haters value conformity to show them that society has changed around them. And one of the people that say we shouldn't be doing this to Sarah Sanders because they can do that to gay people, it's an easy answer. Yeah, people refuse service to gay people, and they refuse service to black people, and that's why in various laws we say you can't do that. But if someone refuses you service because you're black, are you going to change being black? No, you can't. Someone's going to refuse you service because you're gay, are you going to change being gay? No, you can't. If someone's going to refuse you service because your ideas are hateful, well, those are changeable. I'm okay with refusing service based on ideas. If someone refuses me service based on my ideas, because I'm a thinker and not a follower, I'll listen to their arguments. If they make me good arguments, I'll change my ideas. And if they don't make good arguments, then I'm strong enough to stay fast in my belief. But social pressure works best on the unthinking, works best on the Eichmanns, works best on the Trumpists of the world. So, yeah, Maxine Waters, I think you're right. I'm okay with telling Sarah Huckabee Sanders she's not having dinner at my restaurant unless she changes her views and apologizes for the hate that she keeps standing up for. All right, a bunch of callers. I know I want to get to you all if I can. Mark, line 4, San Francisco, go. Mark, line 4, San Francisco. You still there?
Yeah, right now, Mark, we have an opportunity to show the utter disgust and disregard for the American people with this trying to destroy pre-existing conditions that the Republicans are trying to take away, in basically to help the insurance companies capitalize on their profit. Not only that, with Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, all these programs on the chopping block by the Republicans, this is a cruel and also it's going to kill a lot of Americans. To me, this is a way...
Mark, you're making a logical argument. Let me just interrupt you because I'm trying to get a bunch of callers. You're making a good logical argument. Let me tell you that the way to stop haters is not with logic. Haters don't hate logically. People who don't come to an argument by virtue of logic, they can't be dissuaded by logic. They hate because of emotion. And we have to use emotion to stop the hate. The picture of the crying child is more powerful than mentioning millions of children who are crying without health care. Let me move on to some other callers. Tamara, line 2 in Joplin, Missouri. Go ahead, Tamara.
Hi, Mark.
Hi there. We got to move quickly. I'm getting a bunch of callers in. Go ahead.
We Democrats have been turning the other cheek over and over and over again for 17 months. But when you rip babies from their parents asking for legal asylum, that's where we Democrats draw the line.
I agree with you, Tamara. Hallelujah. Thank you for your call. I'm going to get to a couple others real quick. Reggie, line 3 in Georgia. Go ahead, Reggie.
Well, there's one way to get rid of hate, and that's to not give platform to people with hate in their, with evil and hate in their hearts, although we effing screwed that up when we surrendered talk radio and television to them.
Yes.
Platforms who spread evil and hate all over the world, you know?
No, you got a point. And that's why we have to go on their platforms and challenge them on their platforms, as I do on Fox News. And, yeah, even challenge them in their restaurants. Thank you for your call, Reggie. Michael, Old Faithful, you get the final word. Line 5 in the Bronx. Go ahead.
People forget that the one major difference with Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Stephen Miller, aside from the bakery and the blacks that were being tossed out, is that those blacks and the same-sex couple were not creating any hostility. Stephen Miller and Sarah Huckabee Sanders backing up Trump with his hateful diatribe and constantly lying about it and then just attacking.
That's a solid point, Michael. Thank you for calling. You know, you made exactly the right point. Martin Luther King said that you should be judged by the content of your character and not the color of your skin. When you refuse service to a gay couple, when you refuse service to blacks, you're refusing based on who they are. But when you refuse service based on the content of their character, that's actually okay. It's okay to judge haters. It's okay to call out haters. And it's not so much that we have to hate haters. We have to defeat haters. And after they're defeated, treat them with love. Bring them back into humanity. Treat them like we've successfully defeated hate in the past. This is Mark Levine, signing off.